This podcast is part of the Robots Radio Rocket Club, a program designed to help all podcasts reach their full potential. For information about joining the Robots Radio Rocket Club, check out robotsradio.net.
Welcome to the Pixel People Podcast, where we go beyond the quest lines to discover the backstories and motivations of our favorite video game NPCs to better understand them and ourselves. I'm Amelia, also known as Fire Rider, and each episode I'm chatting with a special guest about a character they find particularly interesting. Since we're taking a close look at how these characters impact the story, please be aware that spoilers are likely. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hey, so before we dive in, I just wanted to share with you real quick that I now have a Patreon. I have no plans to include corporate advertising on the show, so if you'd like to support what I'm doing here, I hope you'll check it out. I've got some great rewards at every level, including, for Tier 2 and Tier 3 subscribers, an invitation to record and send me your thoughts about a character I've covered on the show to be included in a future episode. Check it out at patreon.com/firerider, and you can find the link in the show notes. Thanks so much for being a listener. On with the show. Welcome to Pixel People. I'm Amelia, aka Fire Rider, and my guest today is the Bardic Paladin, aka the creator and host of the Sidekicks and Side Quests podcast, Kurt Krenwelge. Welcome to Pixel People.
Danke, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So, who did you bring for us today?
Sure. So I know that on Pixel People, there's a lot of Fallout and a lot of Mass Effect and maybe Skyrim type characters, and I noticed that you were lacking in a particular area in this major franchise, the memes alone. So I decided to go to the Red Dead Redemption universe, and the quintessential NPC character to choose from that series, of course, would be the Strange Man.
The Strange Man, which some people have probably missed and never actually encountered in their playthrough of Red Dead Redemption.
Yes, that is very plausible, because, I know certainly, as you explained to me before we started rolling, that, maybe this is a franchise that you're not familiar with, and so I'll do my best to, provide clarity and not bog down in the details necessarily, but the very first Red Dead Redemption game that came out, 10 years ago now by this point, it's actually the sequel game in a way, because Red Dead Redemption 2 is a prequel video game story to the events of the original Red Dead Redemption. So in Red Dead Redemption, the very first game, is where you actually encounter the Strange Man as a optional person of interest. So it's not one of the main story beats like in a normal Rockstar game. It is an optional thing that, if you go to investigate it, you will come across this character, and you have an opportunity to converse and meet with him several times in that first game. But then interestingly, kind of his presence is like a shadowy sort of a vibe, Easter egg sort of a thing in Red Dead Redemption 2. And I know I just picked up after not having played it for a year, I was like, okay, I just have to start over. You know, I have to mentally prepare myself for this episode. So I've been engrossed in the world of Red Dead Redemption. So I haven't found the Strange Man yet in Red Dead Redemption 2, but I am quite loving being back in the atmosphere, in the era of the of this particular game.
Yeah, as you noted, this is one that I haven't played yet. It's one that's been on my to be played list for a very long time, and I did actually purchase it and downloaded it with the intent of playing it, but my computer just couldn't handle it. So
yeah,
unfortunately, that did not happen.
Right, I played on an Xbox One, and I think it was like 100 gigabytes for it to install. Just the sheer amount of background landscape art, which I think I was watching a recent video, and they're talking about like, whenever you have like game asset files, the thing that takes up the most is like scenery, like landscape textures or buildings or whatever. And so it's just like, yeah, the landscape and the animals and the buildings and whatever else, it's top-notch Rockstar quality for sure in this game.
It's just massive.
Yeah, it's a very large map for sure. Yeah. Much larger than the original one, which I played on Xbox 360 back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, I have it now. Now that I've moved, I have it on PlayStation.
Okay.
So we'll get there. I just haven't yet. But yeah, I don't know if you remember, a while back I had Matt Young on, who was a game artist, and he was talking about like the different ways in which, because his specialty was environment art, and Red Dead was one of the games that we discussed. Kind of the differences there.
Maybe that's all subtly creeping into my brain since I've listened to all your episodes, so you know that vocabulary must be creeping in.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating. You know, how different studios reuse things and
and update, you know, the graphics, the quality of them too.
Yeah,
that's better.
Yeah, it's a super cool looking game, which is, you know, a wonderful, you know, really interesting populated world to explore, and I love that. So it's going to be right up my alley when I get there.
Right.
But
yes.
So
the first step is the most daunting, but once you get settled into the rhythm, you're like, you start going around, going, "All right, boy," and you're like, "All right, I'm in character. I'm there. I'm all for this.
I got this. I'm in character. Yeah. I'm awful. That's yeah. We'll see how I do that. I don't play awful characters very well. I'm usually trying to be
well. I think that kind of segues in, bow ties in nicely to the system, because obviously. In both games, the original one, you're playing John Marston, who he appears as an NPC and eventual playable character in the Red Dead Redemption 2. And then in Red Dead Redemption 2, you play Arthur Morgan. You're both associated with the same outlaw gang. However, you know, despite being outlaws and doing main story missions, which do arguably involve doing, you know, criminal activities like you know, robbing banks or train heists or things of that nature, you still have the ability to choose like what kind of a man you are. Like, are you dishonorable or are you honorable? So there is a morality scale in the game, which does affect certain story outcomes as we go on. So I know there's a lot of ground to cover, so you know, how would you like to kind of laser focus in on this discussion of the strange man specifically and just kind of like what he's all about?
Yeah. Yeah. So for those of us who haven't played the game, can you give us kind of a little intro into who he is, how you meet him, how he interacts with your character, and just sort of a short summary of the quest that he's involved in?
Sure. Okay. So going to Red Dead Redemption. The very first game, protagonist John Marston, the story setup for this game is that, you know, this is years after you've left the gang, you're married, you have a child, but, you know, those pesky Bureau of Investigation, Pinkerton types, they don't like the fact that even though the West is dying, the old ways are dying, and, you know, civilization is coming to the West. They still don't like the fact that there are these characters, these outlaws, criminals that are still hanging around, you know, sullying, you know, manifest destiny, as it were. So as John Marston, you're coerced by the government to do their dirty work in taking out all of your old gang members one by one, because your wife, Abigail, and your son, Jack, are basically being held hostage by the government. And so the premise of Red Dead Redemption is that you are going through and you're kind of having to like revisit and re-question your life up to this point as, well, I used to be an outlaw and I ran in this gang and I did all these things. And so aside from the main story missions, as you're, you know, taking out old gang members one by one and building up allies and rallying support, and all that. There's Rockstar in general is just really good with these like ambient slice of life side quests, random encounter events that just happen. And certainly Red Dead Redemption 2 picks it up like tenfold. So in the original game, I think story, and in Rockstar games, most missions are indicated by like a gold or a yellow sort of color. And so in Red Dead Redemption, there was like a white icon to indicate, oh, like some sort of random person of interest. And so you just happen to be traveling the countryside and there's just a person of interest. And I think the mission is called like, I Know You. And the quest line is called I Know You. And it only indicates that this individual that you're stumbling upon is just called the Strange Man. And so the way this figure appears, he's wearing, a black suit. He's got a mustache and he has this black top hat. And he seems to just kind of be nonchalant, playing it aloof, very mysterious. And it's just like, oh, John Marston, I know you. And then, John, of course, is like coming up like confused, like, friend, do I know you? Like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And so this strange man begins to talk about, morality, choices. Are you a good man? These sorts of things. And the first bit of this quest line is he says, oh, I have a friend in Thieves Landing. He's a married man, but he's thinking about cheating on his wife. Maybe you should go and talk to him, or maybe you should encourage him. So he's putting these moral tests in front of you to kind of see how you will react. So you go to Thieves Landing and you have the option of, okay, you talk to this guy, this drunkard who is going to go with this lady of the night, or, convince him not to do it, or you help him see it through. And then so some time goes later, you open up another part of the map. And then you stumble across him again. And he's like, oh, John, we have to welcome to, because I'm trying to remember, very few lines of dialogue as far as Red Dead Redemption is concerned. And, looking them up on the Red Dead Wiki is certainly fun in its own right. But he talks about like, oh, John, you're a popular man here. Welcome to Mexico, Nuevo Paradiso. You're the man who gunned down guys as soon as you got into the country. And like, so, talking more on these questions and John's getting more agitated, just kind of like, friend, I don't understand. I don't know who you are. And then he's like, well, there's this old nun, she raised money for the poor, for charity. And so she's on her way to the bank. Maybe you can give her an escort or maybe you can just rob her. And so then that's like the second moral question test that he puts in front of you. The final third time that you meet him, you're actually overlooking the. You're on the hill overlooking your property, where your family homestead is. I think definitely this time he's like, oh, we got to stop meeting like this. Or he makes a comment and says, like, this is a nice spot. And then John, by this point, is like agitated. He's trying to, friend, I don't know you. Like, what's going on? These riddles, these games, I don't like it. I don't understand it. Makes a comment about like, I damn you. And then he's like, yes, many men have. And John actually shoots at this guy three times and nothing happens. And then he goes to shoot a fourth time and the gun jams. And I think looking at the wiki, looking at the wiki, they say, oh, the symbology of this is that uncle, who's one of the he used to be in the gang, too. And he just kind of joined John on his property as like a ranch hand kind of a person. Uh-huh. So Uncle John and then eventually Abigail. Eventually all die. And then the son, Jack, he's like the jammed bullet. And then, so he's spared. Mm. And so that's in the wiki files. That's what they say. And so ultimately in the first game, it's this question of like, okay, this strange man, is he God? Is he an angel? Is he a devil? Is he Satan? Like, I know Rockstar was very aloof in their answering and, depending on how you read some of the dialogue, it's like, very well could come across that way. But I think in again, you dig in deep to the notes and certainly all the hardworking people who fill out the information on the wiki. I think if you look at the character model, maybe in the first game or maybe the second game, it labels the strange man as Mysterious Stranger. And then when you go actually digging into that, the Mysterious Stranger was like an unfinished work by Mark Twain, and it was about the devil. And so I'm under the persuasion that perhaps the strange man, if he's not the angel of death, then he probably is Satan, basically. And fitting in with this motif of the Wild West, the dying Wild West, making way for civilization, for these questions of morality, and remembering your death, and like, you know, that's kind of how he's presented in the first game. And then, like I said, in the second game, he's kind of an Easter egg. There's a cabin that you can find, and, you know, there's these cryptic messages and poems, again, alluding to one of the early events that happens in Red Dead Redemption 2, is that someone in a town recognizes you and runs off, Jimmy Brooks. And you, as Arthur Morgan, chase him down, and Jimmy Brooks stumbles over a cliff and he's hanging on by his fingers. He's hanging on for dear life. And it's a matter of Arthur being like, well, is he going to just let this guy fall to his death, or is he going to rescue him and pull him up? And so based on that action, you know, there's a poem that you can find in the strange man's shack, which talks about like, Jimmy Brooks kept running into crooks. And so, you know, the poem either resolves, you know, positively that like he's still alive, or like negatively, like, he's dead. And then just allusions of the strange man involved with the town of Armadillo and a cholera outbreak. It's like Satan, the angel of death. And based on your morality level within Red Dead Redemption 2, the paintings, there's paintings in the cabin that change, and they're either like good animals or they're like predatory animals.
That's interesting.
When you take over as John Marston instead of Arthur, when you go to that cabin, there's a mirror, and if you look in the mirror, the strange man's standing in the mirror, but when you turn around, he's not
there.
That's
creepy.
And you go to Armadillo as John, and you meet this shopkeep, Herbert Moon, and there he has a tiny portrait of the strange man. And John makes a comment like, you know, what's that portrait? And guy is like, I don't know, I like it. And, you know, Herbert Moon's also another strange, interesting NPC character from the first game as well. So
okay,
hopefully that's kind of like a good overview of the character.
Yeah.
And kind of presents why, you know, why he is this interesting figure as far as memento mori, as far as like death and, you know, questioning your moral choices and how you're going to live your life and such.
Yeah, so kind of diving into that a little bit. So for those who are unfamiliar with the concept of memento mori, this is like a Stoic philosophy principle, kind of one of the foundations of the philosophy, you might say. And you kind of touched on it a little bit with the translation being remember that you are mortal and you will die, and kind of letting that be the driving force sort of behind the decisions you make in life, that you will die. We will all die. So how are you going to live these precious years that have been given to you?
Exactly. From my understanding, it was, you know, this was something that like the Roman emperors would have someone following them behind them. Like, so they'd be parading through the streets of Rome with a great victory, but there would always be someone behind them, behind their shoulder, just kind of like repeating memento mori over and over again in their ear, to kind of like give them a humility check, as it were. Mm-hmm. And, you know, As someone of faith, as a Catholic, you know, memento mori is something that is equally, you know, talked about, you know, within the faith as well, as like this concept of memento mori. Remember that you are mortal. You know, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. You know, all these sorts of things that, you know, we as Christians, you know, take seriously and into an account. And so it's nice to have, you know, even if it is, you know, kind of like a fantasy sort of a Wild West, but to have that sort of concept built into the game to like kind of like really make you think. Because obviously with other Rockstar games, I don't think morality necessarily really factors in with Grand Theft Auto, because obviously the appeal of Grand Theft Auto is like, oh, you're part of an organized crime family, or you're just super cool, you have tons of money, you get rocket launchers and fast cars and cheat codes and all this stuff. And, you know, there's probably cheat codes for Red Dead Redemption, but, you know, it's much more of an engaging story, as like, you know, this is the Old West. This way of life is dying. And like, you're one of the last like gunslingers, outlaws, bandits, ruffians. So, you know, facing not only your actual mortal death, because spoiler alert, in Red Dead Redemption, John Marston, after doing all this dirty work for the government, you know, fulfilling this prophecy of the strange man where he says, oh, this is a rather nice spot. That's the spot that John Marston's buried, because as soon as he's done doing all the government's dirty work, they come to attack him at his ranch. That's where Uncle gets killed. And so John lets Abigail and Jack escape. And so in this very heroic sort of last stand, you know, all these government agents are standing outside his barn, and you have a mechanic called Deadeye, which is like, you get to slow down and you imagine like the gunslinger who just like acts really fast, fans the hammer of the pistol and is able to like shoot six shots really quick. So your Deadeye goes, and you can only pick so many targets because it's just too many people. And after you let loose your shots, you're just like John Marston is in a very much like in an 80s squib sort of a thing, just like takes round volley after volley of gunfire from the government and just falls down dead. And so depending on, I don't know how much it really comes into play as far as the credits are concerned necessarily, but definitely your honor level as far as like, oh, you know, like how honorable were you before your death? Certainly, I do know in Red Dead Redemption 2 with Arthur Morgan, based on your moral choices, depends on your climactic struggle, the gang. This is the story of the Dutch Vanderland gang falling apart. And so Jack escapes, or John, I should say. John escapes. Arthur goes to confront Micah, who is one of the other gang members and is universally hated. Like, if you go and find the Red Dead Redemption memes and you just utter the words Micah Bell, everyone's like, oh, I hate that guy. He's the worst. Yeah, that's the reason why. So if you're super honorable... If you're super honorable, you have the chance to fight Micah on this cliffside. But of course, early on in the game, Arthur Morgan gets infected with tuberculosis through the course of being an outlaw and confronting a person who's infected with TB. And so over the course of the game, you're watching Arthur get weaker and weaker and really struggling with that question of morality, of memento mori, of like, well, you know I have a ticking clock. Like, how am I going to live? So if you take the more honorable path, you did things like you saved Jimmy Brooks and you like helped orphans and widows and you just did generally good, upstanding actions. Then like you see a deer. As you die, your body's ravaged by TB, but Arthur gets to lay on that cliffside and see the sunrise one last time before he dies. Whereas if you're dishonorable, you know, going out guns blazing, like Micah just executes you. You don't even have a chance to really fight or like have that moment of forgiveness or closure or anything like that. Because I haven't actually gotten through to the end of Red Dead Redemption 2, but I do know looking ahead and reading videos, it's like, the thing is like, have John escape or go back for all the money. And I think those fights pretty much play out nearly the same way. But basically, it's like, if you're dishonorable, you kind of die this indistinguished, horrific, oh, whatever a good synonym for just not a nice way to die. You're not dying with any sort of dignity or composure or resolution, really. But if you choose the more honorable path, at least you do. And then, you know, just so you're not like, oh man, Red Dead Redemption 2 is over at that point. But no, you actually pick up the game as John Marston. So you do get a chance, like all the diehard fans get a chance to be like, oh, I get to play John again. Like, this is good. Like, I love playing John back in Red Dead Redemption. And now, you know, now I'm back with him.
Nice.
Well, yeah, so,
I think it's an interesting idea too, and it's one that I've seen play out in a number of different games. Even if it's sometimes, you know, it's not spelled out, you know, as that, but I can see the effects of it in different games and different characters. And like one that immediately comes to mind, and you mentioned Mass Effect earlier, but the character of Thane in Mass Effect, who has a terminal illness. And is trying to be a better father, you know, and fix that relationship before he passes away. And I think that's a really similar idea. And, you know, some of the other games where you're playing a character who will eventually die at the end, you know, if you've played it before, you know that you have that hanging over your head. And it's right. It's interesting because, you know, in a lot of games, you know, the game does end and you survive, but there are, what am I trying to say? There are multiple games that end with, the player character's death, which is a bit more real.
Right. And sometimes it might be there's a fate worse than death. Sometimes.
Yeah.
In games presented. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, what path are you going to take? It's interesting too, because there are people have actually studied this, and you know, about what directions people tend to play when they play a game, and the vast majority do tend to play a more honorable type of character, you know, a good karma character, a paragon character, you know, that kind of thing. It's the far more common route to take, but you do have your diehards who really want to go out there and make a big mess.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Live. You know, you attempt that playthrough. Yeah. Certainly after you've already mastered the game, and, you know, or maybe you're a streamer and you're like, okay, I know the audience wants to see a goofy, evil playthrough or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, to me, that's a very difficult thing to do. I have a very hard time playing, a bad character. And, you know, I mean, I've done runs before where, you know, especially in a game that has like a lot of moral gray area where you can kind of argue back and forth a little bit about which, you know, factions are good, which factions are evil. And, you know, I'll do a run through on that, but then I'll feel like absolute garbage afterward.
Right.
Cause it's just not so much my nature.
Well, you mentioned Thane. Yeah.
Yes.
Funny enough, you know, maybe segueing, you know, I know we're here certainly to discuss The Strange Man and all things Red Dead Redemption, but it's a nice tangent in the fact that on my show, Sidekicks and Side Quests, every guest that I have, aside from making up NPC characters for your tabletop role-playing game, Dungeons and Dragons campaigns, you know, every guest that comes on the show, I ask them, who's your favorite NPC and why? What's your favorite side quest and why? And so one of my guests is just
my favorite type of questions.
Right. And a surprising episode that I, you know, I get a tickle out of seeing the download numbers, you know, slowly tick up on it. Another fellow religious person, Daniel Silver, who's the co-founder of Doxicon. I was so fortunate to have come on as a guest. So he talked about for his favorite NPC was Thane, because he's one of the few openly religious characters, he said, as presented in a game. And so we were able to kind of bond over our shared Christianity a little bit in that episode. And so I think, you know, I certainly don't make any apologies for it, and I don't try and like hide it under a bushel or anything like that, but I just think it's kind of interesting that continues to be a really popular episode for people to download and listen to. And of course, the character we ended up making was a small raven kenku bird arbiter of order and chaos. So maybe that has something to do with it too. But I also like to think that perhaps the discussions that I have with guests on my show maybe had something to do with it as well.
He's a fascinating character, and he was one that on my first playthrough I didn't really get to know very well. I had failed his loyalty mission, and he died during the suicide mission, so I really missed out on Thane on my first run through, and this time I'm like, man, this is a great character. I was playing... I completed his loyalty mission on stream, and like the conversation that he had afterwards, you know, about his failures as a father had me in tears. Like, literally on stream, I was in tears because it was just, it was so powerful. It was
well,
just
definitely
so beautifully
if
done.
You stream Red Dead Redemption 2, there's probably going to be plenty of opportunity for tears as well concerning.
I'm suspecting.
Yeah, Arthur's horse. I know I had another guest.
Oh, no,
show.
Not the horse.
I know, yeah, I had Kia come on.
We're going to have a never ending story moment.
Yep. Yeah, she was like, oh, something happened to the horse. I cried, God. And I quit playing the game. So I was like, okay, yeah. So different people react differently, I suppose, to some of those heavy-hitting moments. But I guess that's what amazing. Makes it good drama.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. I love games that have those really hard-hitting emotional moments. You know what? Some games play it safe. Some games really kind of go for the kill, and I'm here for the games that will yank your heart out and give it a good squeeze and make you feel all the feels.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Hey guys, as you know, I'm part of the Robots Radio Rocket Club, and I wanted to take a moment to introduce you to a couple of other great Rocket Club shows you'll want to check out.
How does the song Country Roads begin? Almost heaven, West Virginia, right? A lot has changed in Appalachia since the Scorch Plague, and it is far from heaven now. Far From Heaven, a Fallout 76 story, is a rich and immersive audio drama based upon the popular video game. With strong storytelling and fascinating characters from across many familiar factions, Far From Heaven is a podcast fans of the video game will love. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, Amazon, and many other great podcasting platforms. Far From Heaven, a Fallout 76 story, available now.
Do you like League of Legends? Do you like Legends of Runeterra? Do you like anything set in the Runeterran universe? Well, in League of Lore, that is what we shall be discussing. I am Skullhead Soldiers, and this is a podcast about the lore of League of Legends and other properties set in the Runeterran universe. We'll be diving into each region, as well as all the champions that exist in this wonderful, crazy fantasy universe. And I hope to see you all there.
Hey all you wannabe raiders out there, it's your bestest girl Rose coming at you from top of the world. Now it's time for your local traffic and weather. Welp, looks like almost everyone's still dead, so traffic is at a standstill. And now a word from our sponsor, because they're totally not bribing me with massive amounts of chems or anything. Seems as the stuffed shirts are back at the White Springs playing games with that total loser Modus. But hey, if that's your thing, whatever. So if all you squares wanted to hear more totally sort of, but maybe not boring stories about rebuilding Appalachia and being all goody-two-shoes, definitely not raiders, check out this thing they call a podcast, The Modus Files, whatever that's supposed to be, on Spotify, iTunes, and wherever else you listen to those things. Double ugh, they're not paying me enough for this. Till later, this is Rose. Raiders rule!
So, I was kind of curious, when you first encountered this, quest, when you first encountered this quest and you first played it through, was this something that kind of Did it jump out at you at the time, or did you need to kind of sit with it for a while?
That's a great question, because, yeah, certainly a game 10 years old, you know, the last time you really sit down and play it. And, of course, you know, I do have to make sure I mention, because I'm sure someone would if I didn't. There is a non-canonical DLC that was released alongside Red Dead Redemption, which was Undead Nightmare. So it was kind of like a zombie mode. And so it kind of turns that memento mori question sort of on its head, because
It does.
Because you end up having, you know, the dead you know, rising up and kind of like a zombified at the, because you're still alive when the zombie outbreak happens, and so it's this whole sort of tangential non-canonical side quest, and oh, you're dead, but then at the end of it, like, you rise up as like zombified John Marston and can, you know, you can still sandbox, run around the world and stuff like that. But yeah, when it first came out, I know, definitely, you know, I, you know, self-professed Christian, self-professed white hat, sort of a good guy character playthrough on RPG games. So yeah, I was definitely making sure to try and be very high moral standing for John Marston. And of course, I'm a completionist as much as one can be. Man. Funny side story of trying to find all the flags in the original Assassin's Creed and missing just one flag and just like, missing.
Oh no.
Yeah, 99 out of 100, and I can't find that one flag out of the entire game. Anyway, but yeah, you know, you want to try and, you know, you find all the plants, find all the animals, find all the rare creatures and stuff like that. And so, of course, you know, seeing this come along. But yeah, no, I mean, it's certainly... I would, you know, trying to get into my head at least 10 years ago when I first encountered it. Well, certainly it's flavor wise, it's different. I mean, you're talking about matters like these high philosophy matters of like morality and good versus evil. Not that that's not addressed anywhere else in the game, but like, you know, it's not anything like, oh, go fetch these flowers for me, or hey, go run to town and go get this thing. It's like, I speak in this very coded, mysterious sort of way, and there's this guy that's going to cheat on his wife. How are you going to tell that, you know, person? How are you going to encourage him, or how are you going to dissuade him? Or, oh, there's a nun that's, you know, that's got a bunch of money trying to take it to the bank. Are you going to help her? Or are you going to rob her? You know, kind of, you know, poke, you know, getting to the knife point with the heart, as it were, kind of stabbing at that. So yeah, I probably, you know, and then of course, by the time it gets to him, like shooting him three times and then like nothing happens, it's like, by that point I was definitely like, you know, maybe not as spiritually mature then as I was now, but definitely I could have been like, okay, yeah, this is definitely like an angel or a demon or a devil or Satan or angel of death or something. Like, this is not like a normal person. Like, obviously this is some sort of supernatural, intruding, condescending down to John's level, to John's plane of existence, to really put these questions before him, as to like, how are memento mori, man, are you going to resolve your life? You know, when the tough gets going, are you going to get going or not?
What's kind of, excuse me. I'm wondering, is there a particular in-game reward for acting one way or the other in either of those, moral decisions that you have to make? Like, because they're fairly black and white. Like, there's not really gray area in there. I mean, protecting a nun versus robbing a nun is pretty clearly like, this is the good choice, this is the bad choice. There's no real moment of, oh, but the nun is actually, you know, some horrible thing, and by, you know, so it doesn't do that. It's just very clearly a black and white choice. And I'm wondering, is there something that would incentivize you to make a bad decision? Because what it's almost reminding me of is kind of the biblical story about Satan tempting Jesus. You know what I mean? You know which one I mean?
Right, when he's on his...
specifics.
part of his earthly ministry and before he goes into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday and proceeds with Holy Week, right, he retreats to the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, which is where the liturgical season of Lent comes from, to proceed the Eastertide, Easter season.
Yes.
Very much. I'm trying to look here through a fan wiki really quick just to kind of see, like, you know, what is the kind of the outcome. So I know, like, for the first part here, it says players can either dissuade the drunk friend from cheating on his wife or give him $15 to persuade him to cheat on his wife. Giving him the money will cause the player to lose honor unless the bandana, which is a piece of clothing equipment, is equipped. Bandanas help conceal your identity, so that's how it, like, certain actions can be negated.
Sure.
So that's definitely the first one. And then as far as the nun, if the, let's see, so this time the strange man gives the player the choice of donating $10 to a nun or robbing her. If the player chooses to donate to the nun, the player will have random encounters with other nuns asking Marston for a donation in the future, similar to other random encounters such as standoffs and wagon rescues. Choosing not to donate money will result in a loss of honor.
Okay, interesting. So it's almost like it's kind of a wash either way. There's no clear benefit to either side unless honor is something that you value.
Right, and I was just going to very quickly here just try and read up on the mechanics of it. Honor is the system that serves to measure social acceptability, the protagonist's actions. So in the main original game, honor will affect how NPCs interact with the player in different ways, depending on whether one has accumulated high or low honor. The psychological effect of honor on NPCs is relative to Marston's fame level. A player with high honor is rewarded twice as much pay for jobs and bounties, is bestowed the duster coat, and finds that nearly all shopkeepers offer discounts, while lawmen and eyewitnesses alike will sometimes overlook minor crimes. Players with hero honor rank have a chance of a random encounter with a nun who bestows the Obscuridad del Santo Andres, a kit item that makes enemies less accurate. If the hero honor rank is maintained after receiving the Obscuridad, random nuns will occasionally give the player gifts of money or ask for charity, I guess about $70. Players with low honor can bribe eyewitnesses for less, enjoy discounts in the shady town of Thieves Landing. Their whistle can beckon a special, unique dark horse with a white face and red scars, and eyewitnesses, but not lawmen, won't dare snitch for anything less than murder. Marston will also insult people instead of greeting them. Players can avoid changes in honor and fame altogether by the use of a bandana. Honor also directly affects Marston's bounty levels. Bad deeds will increase Marston's bounty, while good deeds can reduce his bounty. So that's how it plays out in the first game. So certainly, you know, doing the more honorable things, you know, obviously does give you a material benefit. And if I quickly scan it here for the second game as well, which might help me in my current playthrough of Red Dead Redemption 2. So much like in the original game, players can receive discounts from various stores if they have high honor. At rank 2, stores offer 10% discount. Rank 4 offers 25% discount. Rank 8 offers 50% discount. Meanwhile, having low honor allows the player to loot better quality items from dead bodies.
Hmm.
Once the player reaches rank 4, the hero's pearl grip for the Cattleman's Revolver becomes available. And if the player reaches an honor rank of 4, low honor, the Gunslinger Ebony Grip, exclusive to the Double Action Revolver, becomes available for purchase. However, players should note that the latter can sometimes be acquirable with the corresponding amount of positive honor, likely as a result of the glitch. And I think more so in the second game, honor affects dialogue in many of the game's story cutscenes, as well as in his ending. High honor Arthur is more selfless and considerate of others, putting a greater emphasis on keeping the women safe and helping John Marston's family. Contrarily, with Low Honor, Arthur is depicted as a more selfish person, prioritizing his own desires over those of others. Low Honor Arthur Morgan is also proud and more motivated by money, displaying qualities of greediness and vengefulness while being apathetic to the struggles of others. The animal present in Arthur's visions, as he's dying, is dependent on honor. With High Honor, you see a buck basking in the sun's rays, and with Low Honor, Arthur sees a black coyote in the rain. Honor level also affects the voice flashbacks present in both his last ride and after his diagnosis of tuberculosis. With High Honor, he remembers more positive and hopeful words. With Low Honor, he instead remembers negative and defeatist words. Arthur's death is ultimately determined by his honor. With High Honor, Arthur succumbs to his tuberculosis and battle wounds, but with Low Honor, Arthur is killed, executed, namely, by Micah Bell.
Interesting. So there are definite perks to having low arm or low honor. So you can get weapons that you wouldn't be able to get otherwise.
Right. Or, maybe people aren't going to be as likely to snitch on you, or they're more fearful of you. Thinking about the Man in Black or something like that. Like, oh, people are terrified of this guy. Whereas if you have someone like the Lone Ranger that shows up, it's like, oh, everyone loves this guy. Like, yeah, I want to be the Lone Ranger's friend.
Yeah. Okay. So that's really interesting. Yeah. So what a strange little encounter to run into. And it seems like, the decisions you make are very much going to be dictated by how you're playing that through. But just for the way he challenges you on it. And it sounds like he has, like, I remember when I was reading through too, ahead of time, he makes a comment about, so you're okay with killing people all the time, but you're not so okay with this guy cheating on his wife. And I thought that was really an interesting, call out to,
an interesting call out as well, since it's fresh in my mind here in the second game, because of course the inciting incident for Red Dead Redemption 2 and thereby historically for the first Red Dead Redemption game is that the Dutch Vanderland gang is attempting a heist on the ferry, on like a riverboat ferry in the town of Blackwater. But for whatever reason, the Pinkertons, the feds they're on the know-how that this heist is about to happen. And so they're caught, like, okay, they might be able to weasel their way out if they get caught or something. But then Dutch Vanderland executes this woman, Heidi McCord. And in that meeting, in Red Dead Redemption, the first one, the very first time you meet the strange man, he makes the comment to John, cause John's like, do I know you? And he's like, no, friend, you probably don't know me. Do you know Heidi McCord? And he's like, who? He's like, exactly. You've forgotten far more important people than me. And he talks about, like, yes, Heidi McCord was the lady that Dutch shot in the head on that ferry job. And, her eye was hanging out and her brain splattered against the wall. He's using very graphic language. But yet the strange man is speaking in this very sort of aloof, stoic sort of a tone, not really he himself, his words not really giving away for a moral inclination either way, just kind of matter of fact stating the events of what happened historically in the past. And starting out Red Dead Redemption 2, you're kind of like thrown into the middle of the action as far as like the immediate aftermath of that ferry job gone wrong. Like everyone's fleeing into the cold mountains, trying to, flee from the Pinkertons so that they won't get found out. And every single event, every bit of action that the Vanderland gang takes with trying to, these crazier schemes of like getting money. Okay, we're going to get the money. We're going to get rich. We're going to get out of here. We're going to go and continue to thrive in the West. We won't have to worry about civilization or Pinkertons or the government or law or anything like that. And Micah Bell kind of serves pretty much so kind of like a devil character, like literally. I mean, if if the strange man is supposed to be like Satan or like from the Mark Twain story, or if he's supposed to be like an angel of death, then in Red Dead Redemption 2, Micah Bell certainly is like a small D devil. He is a diabolical sort of character. Mm, he is all about chaos, scattering, division. You know, he is definitely unruly. Arthur Morgan makes it very clear that he does not like Micah and his methods. And, you know, Micah is just talking into Dutch's ear and kind of poisoning him as it goes on. And so the gang, that's what causes like this whole downfall of the game. Like none of their, they have to move, they have to relocate camps all the time. Their schemes backfire, you know, people start dying or leaving left and right. And, you know, the gang just falls apart. And then, of course, you know, that's what, you know, and Arthur's dying of tuberculosis. And so he's, you know, even as much as he hates, not hates, but as much as he, because he and John butt heads, because Arthur, you know, Arthur's like this loyal lieutenant for Dutch. But then like John Marston's kind of like this golden boy. You know, John left for a year from the gang. And like no one else in the gang would have really been able to do that. But for some reason, John could do it. And, you know, there's more stuff that goes into it. And so there's like a point of contention between Arthur and John. And so when you have that moral choice of like, you know, Arthur's dying and it's like, no, John, I'm going to help you and Abigail and Jack escape from this life. You need to leave this life behind and, you know, go start something new, which they kind of do. But then, of course, as the events set in motion for the first Red Dead Redemption gang, government steps in and is like, no, no, John, we're the new masters. We're the new devils, as it were. And we need you to purge the West for us.
That's so interesting. It's interesting to me, too, just, you know, even with the name of the game, the whole idea being played with here is the idea of, for both of these characters, redeeming otherwise terrible people. So if you're playing an honorable playthrough for John, you know, and trying to resolve essentially these hanging threads from his old life, and then you've got this devil character that steps in with kind of a, or you could go back and do things the way you used to do, you know, to tempt him away from that redemption that he appears to be seeking.
Exactly.
Awesome. Thank you so much for bringing the strange man. This is definitely a character I would have never thought of, and I absolutely would have missed. And I love those little hidden characters with their little hidden gem of stories and life lessons and ideas to kick around. Those are some of my favorite little characters, and they are so fun to discuss. And I'm so glad that you brought him. And just, you know, the concept of Memento Mori, for folks who aren't familiar with that, I definitely encourage you to, you know, look it up and you know, learn something about it. And it's I think, a principle worth always keeping in the back of our minds. And I know there are a lot of folks who do ascribe to Stoic philosophy who will keep like a little coin or something with that reminder on it as they go about their days, you know, in the manner of what you were mentioning with the general or the person behind the general muttering it. That's kind of their own touchstone to that idea to keep it front and center. If people would like to talk to you more about Red Dead Redemption or check out your show, where can they find you?
Sure. Thank you. So, yes, of course, you can find Sidekicks and Side Quests and me, by extension, on Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. You just have to search for Side KQ Podcast. That's K as in Kilo, Q as in Quebec. So Side KQ Podcast. I didn't want to have poor people typing in Sidekicks and Side Quests you know, Twitter land or Facebook land trying to find it. So I thought that was a nice succinct way of kind of putting it together. But yeah, Sidekicks and Side Quests has a dedicated Reddit. You know, we're certainly trying to grow up and build as far as like a place to go to kind of discuss the NPCs that are created on the show and like, oh, I decided to use this NPC in my game. Great. Well, here's an area where you can kind of give us like a report of like, well, I deployed this character and this is how everyone reacted. You know, your thoughts on it? And certainly, you know, D&D, of course, Dungeons and Dragons is, you know, the theme of the podcast, but that doesn't mean that we don't have an opportunity in asking our probing questions of your favorite sidekicks or your favorite side quests, that we don't get to talk about wonderful things like Red Dead Redemption and Fallout and Mass Effect and Final Fantasy games. So yeah, I would love for y'all to listen through the back catalog. I know I am desperately working on catching up on that back catalog, and we're hoping to have new episodes out soon. I am a brand new father, so a lot of my time has been...
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, so a lot of my time, deservedly so, is being redirected
toward that,
my little one. Yes. So yeah, no sweat as far as getting episodes out, but you know, I haven't forgot about it, and I want to keep it going. So yeah, find us Twitter, Facebook, Reddit. And yeah, we have a website as well. So it's just sidekicksandsidequests.com. Would love you to go to the website, send us an email, and subscribe to the podcast on the app of your choice.
Awesome. And I'll put links in the show notes so people can find you pretty easily and don't have to scramble to write everything down.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
we do have handy blogs. So if you do play Dungeons and Dragons and you like some of these characters that are made, there's a little blog section where I basically type everything out. So if you can copy paste it into your notes or change them how you need them or print them out and do whatever you need. You know, it's all about just giving to the community like a template, an idea, and then you take that idea and you run with it and then just tell us how it worked out.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. What a great idea. I love it. Well, thank you again. This was such a fun conversation. I enjoyed talking with you, and I hope to chat with you again soon.
Alrighty. Sounds like a plan.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Pixel People podcast. Check out the show notes for links to the game and characters discussed and to connect with me and my guest. Want to be a guest on the show? There's a link in the show notes for a short form you can fill out, and I'll reach out to you. A huge thank you to my patrons, especially my Tier 2 and 3 patrons, Red and Aperture Flash, and thank you to Elias Ali and Andy Brooks, who created the theme music. You can follow the show on Twitter at PixelPeoplePod, and keep up with FireRider on Twitter, Twitch, and Discord. Enjoying the show? Be sure to subscribe, and if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, I'd love it if you could leave a review. It helps more people find the show. See you next time.